T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Today, tonight, this morning, I'm talking to Mary Rodwell. It's morning time in Australia. It's evening time here in Canada, and I'm honored. I've talked to Mary a number of times. She's always been very gracious to share her information. She's recognized internationally as one of Australia's leading researchers and writers in the UFO and contact phenomena areas, and that's what I'm into. I'm into the contact phenomena. I think we've sort of been left out in this latest disclosure thing. They say don't talk about aliens, talk about technology, talk about potential threats, interfering with our airspace, but don't talk about aliens. Don't talk about that kind of stuff. And I'm proud to have Mary. Mary's the founder of the principal and principal of Australian Close Encounter Resource Network. And that's, again, I'm into the idea of the people who are having the experiences. I say quite clearly that you will not learn what this phenomenon is about or what's going on until you talk to the people who are interacting with the intelligence behind the phenomena. You can look at all the lights in the sky, pick up all the metal you want, have all the crash material you want, and you're still not going to learn until you actually interact. And there are a lot of people. And Mary has dealt with 3,000, probably a lot more than 3,000 now, cases of people who have had these encounters. And so I'm interested in talking to Mary today about the messages. What's really going on here? Why is this phenomena here? What have they to teach us? And so welcome, Mary, and thank you for joining me again. And I'm honored always to talk to you.
Grant, it's an absolute pleasure. And it's always really fascinating to see, like myself, that the real pointy end of this is the experiencer, because they're the ones having the contact with these intelligences.
Yeah. And you've worked a lot with children. Can we go maybe start with there? That I think you're probably you absolutely would be the prime person, because a lot of people will deal with experiencers who have been lifelong experiencers and stuff like that. But you somehow got into the children that are having these experiences. So describe to me how that came to be. Maybe it's part of the evolutionary reincarnation thing that you got this role, that you came in to play this role, because you do, I think you were the only one that really deals a lot with children. So let's go there and talk about the importance of the children and how you got into suddenly having all these children who were starseeds, indigos, and what they have to teach us.
I think the what brought me into the children was looking at the intergenerational aspect or pattern to this experience, where more and more I was noticing that when I asked an experiencer, you know, was there anyone else in the family who'd had, these kinds of contact, mum or dad or grandparents, for example, and they would often say, oh, well, granddad was always interested in UFOs, or my grandmother was always a little bit psychic, and whatever. And there I could see a very likely link coming down the generations. And then it was, you know, my son or my daughter is talking about going through, you know, somebody coming into the room and them going through the walls or going through the window, being taught things with their special friend who may be blue with big black eyes, et cetera, et cetera. This really fascinated me, because what I loved about the children was there wasn't the programming to shut them down in the same way as most adults had been almost programmed out of accepting their experiences because they were afraid of being crazy or being thought crazy, etc. Whereas the children didn't know it wasn't okay. And so you had an integrity with their stories and how they described their feelings about, you know, these beings that they were interacting with. And the other thing that I noticed was many of them were being seen as different. In metaphysics, it was they were being called indigos, crystals, children of light, golden children. So they were recognizing a difference in them, often to do with their energy field, you know, the aura. They would see the indigos with this kind of indigo aura or whatever. Those who were intuitive or psychic could see that. But they, many of them were also labeled ADHD, Asperger's, some forms of autism and dyslexia. There's a whole range of these so-called labeling or dysfunctions where what I was seeing was many of these these children were actually very intuitive, were seeing orbs of light, were seeing energy fields, were seeing spirits, were seeing these intelligences, their special friend, and having interactions with them. So what I was seeing for me was an expanded consciousness in these children that were not being understood by mainstream psychology or psychiatry. They were just seen as often very shy, and many of them were very shy because they're empaths. They tune into other people so they can be overwhelmed by other people, and oh, they're oversensitive. They're too shy, you know, and it was seen as a dysfunction rather than what is happening here? Why are these children the way that they are? And fortunately, with my research, I was getting it validated by a number of those within that had the credentials that were saying to me, this was not a genetic fault, that these were the new kids coming in. And Dr. William Brown, molecular biologist, told me, in 2010, he was basically saying, these are the new kids. They already have more activated DNA. They know what they're, you know, they already know what they're being taught, this kind of thing. So I had validation there. And then I also had validation from another molecular biologist who's an experiencer in Sweden, Dr. Lena Olsen, who has always labeled herself as a bit ADHD, a bit Asperger's, calling them letter people. And she had seen that they had abilities, heightened physical attributes, such as they could see more of the visual spectrum. They had higher sensitivity to hearing, to touch, to smell. But not only that, they were also experiencing a multidimensional world where they were, you know, some of them seemed to be synesthetic. And with that, for those that don't understand what I mean, synesthesia is considered a dysfunction. But what it's really saying is if you see the letter seven, you could feel the energy of that seven. You could see it in color. You would have a multidimensional understanding of seven rather than just the letter seven that you're seeing. It would be seen as an energy. It would be seen as our multidimensional cells coming in, which these children are exhibiting. So of more and more is ADHD, or my child is a little bit autistic, or my child has Asperger's. I kept thinking, well, what are these beings doing if they are, in fact, have an agenda or a program of dysfunctions, if in fact they're not dysfunctions at all, what they really are is a heightened, more advanced human that we don't understand yet. And I believe that the idea of expanding their consciousness and awareness means they're harder to program. I believe that's deliberate because it's the programming that shuts us down. As you're aware of, Grant, we're told we can't do this. This isn't, you know, you can't experience multidimensionality in conventional psychology, because as soon as you do, you're considered crazy. You know, you start saying you're seeing spirits or beings or lights or whatever. modern psychology doesn't allow you to have those kinds of experiences. So what it seemed to me is these children were wired differently deliberately so that they wouldn't be pulled into this limited paradigm, this 3D paradigm many of us have been exposed to, which has shut us down in many cases. Particularly higher education is very good at shutting you down from anything unless it's logical or analytical, whereas these children are focused on a multidimensional reality. And that is why they struggle on this planet, because they're saying, well, why can't you see? Don't you go on spaceships? You know, don't you feel that? You know, this, what's wrong with you, you know, or what's wrong with me? They get to a point where they're afraid of what is it that's, you know, there must be something wrong with me then, because I'm seeing things you're not seeing. But I think it's been a really deliberate program of rewiring. And I always remember Neil Gold, and I've always felt, you talk about synchronicities, Grant, a lot. I believe the synchronicities, I've been given little nuggets of info, talking to different people, I'm sure is deliberate. And Neil Gold in Hong Kong, who's a researcher, very, you know, wrote the book Close Encounters of the ADHD Kind, said he always saw reality with a greater perspective of a multidimensional understanding of what he was seeing. And he retranslated ADHD to always dialed into higher dimensions, which is, I believe, exactly what we are seeing with these children. And now it's time to understand that. I remember a girl with autism, and she was being asked, why is it that you can't look in someone's eyes? Why do you always look down, you know, and not look into somebody's eyes? And she said, if I look into somebody's eyes, I get 10,000 images all at once from that person.
Wow.
Just think of the overload of that for that one person. The clues are there if we listen to the kids.
Yes.
So when you say, why do I, you know, focus on the children? Because they're coming in and they're an open book before they get shut down by our educational system and our belief systems and all the other things that shut us down. And they say it as it is, how they're seeing it. And if we start listening to them, we will get a better idea of where we're going, because they are the ones that have come in to tell us that.
Now, I've asked you this before. This is this idea of the soul contract idea, that because you'll hear people talk about when you see, you bring up abduction, well, they're taking us against our will and all this kind of stuff. Is the children thing, do you see it like I would see it, as a sort of a plan that they came in on this plan, that this is, there's nothing random happening here, that they have missions? And what do they say when you're finished talking to the children and they go on their way? What do they see as their mission in the world? What do they see that they should be doing? And does it empower them for you to talk to them? When you actually listen to them, do they sort of see themselves as special now because they're not ostracized anymore? Is that what's going on?
Well, there's multiple questions in there. The first thing I will say to you is that many of the children remember before they came here.
Oh, okay.
One particular young boy of 10 said to me that he came from a planet where he was a blue being, that he'd come to this planet for the first time, his first time his soul had been here. He was a center seed, and that he was going to connect to the planet to actually help with the pollution on this planet. That was his mandate. That was his mission. He said, you know, he talked about being able to see interdimensionally with his eyes open. He talked about being able to work with crystals, this kind of thing. Another young 9-year-old explained that he remembers being a spirit, a will-o'-the-wisp, he said. And I saw these lives that I had a choice to make. And I chose this one on planet Earth because I wanted to do a mission here on planet Earth. He again talked about being able to go to the ninth dimension. He explained the greys could only go to the sixth dimension.
Wow.
And he explained that if he knew the mathematical number of a planet, he could go through a portal with that number, that frequency. So he would use the runes, which is, you know, the gods had the runes in Norway and Scandinavia. He would use a rune as a portal to go to the particular planet, as long as he knew its mathematical number, which is frequency. You know, this is how I explain it. I just need the number and then I can go there. So they're talking about being interdimensional. They have no problem with explaining that. There was a 10-year-old in England that told me he came through a portal in the sun. He came from another dimension. You know, many of them are talking about different roles that they have to play. One of them told me he was an Arcturian ambassador. He'd come to this planet to actually deal with creating ecological habitat that would be in line with the ecosystem rather than what we're doing now. Another one, 8-year-old, explained to me, he lives locally actually, explained to me that he communicates with animals. And he said, I'm here to help them, help humans understand we must take care of them, we must respect them. He said that was part of his role coming to this planet. So some of them have come in as healers, empaths, and they will say, I can feel from everybody. I can sense from everyone around me what's going on with them, what if they've got an illness or if they've got an emotional trauma. And many of them become very quiet and because they're sensitive, because they can't handle the overload, the sensory overload. And they get taken to psychologists. What's wrong with my child? There's nothing wrong with them. They're just hypersensitive and they're learning how to manage being human against where they've come from. And that's what they will say. You know, I came from a crystal planet, which was all crystalline, or I came from a water planet. You know, they'll explain what it was like on the water planet. So their memories are not just of coming in, but also where they're from and what gifts they've got. So one young lady of 8 said that she communicates with the elements, and that when she gets taken by the beings onto board craft, she's shown how to use to levitate, how to use her third eye, manipulate matter. And she said she was shown genetic engineering, where they were showing how they mixed various species to seed other planets, not just in this universe, but other universes. So they were actually demonstrating to her what they were doing. Wow. So you've got, and one of the latest, you know, you want to go into the weird, is a young man of all of 9 explaining that he's a time traveler, that in the future he has only 4 digits, no nails, coming back to this particular planet. He talked about the beings, the tall beings that were scientists, having an IQ of over 400, was he explained, explained that. He also, and some people are not going to like what he said about God, but, you know, he said the beings told him, and I'll actually read the way he put it, because otherwise I might get it just wrong. Just let me explain how he says this. Okay. He said this about, that's the time travel thing. Here we go. He said that he was shown dinosaur times and future times and spoke in depth about God, and said that the older, bigger aliens told him God is not what most people think. They showed him it's this vortex-type black hole that isn't a black hole. It's a violet light that creates. The aliens don't even know who created it or when. So there you go. Make of that what you will.
Wow, that's amazing that children would have that kind of complexity of that. Because that's only like that's recent, like quantum physics type stuff, where it's way ahead of. You never would have talked like that. Even adults wouldn't have talked like that before. So, one of the things that when we come to children, you know that I'm working. We worked a little bit with Seth, and you have these. Have you worked a lot with these children? Because I think that was one of the most amazing things I've seen in terms of children with blindfolds who are intuitive, who can hear a mile away, stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with these kids? Because I've sort of linked up with a number of them around the world. I'm actually trying to challenge the the trainers to have like an Olympics for these kids, you know. And I know in Australia, they actually set up, I don't know if you saw the obstacle course, they actually set up an obstacle course where these kids were going through this and they were timing each other how fast they could go through, which is absolutely amazing when you have a child who has a blindfold on, who can do everything that anybody else can do. And that just sort of throws the whole idea of the physical universe down the drain, that we have no clue what's going on when you see what these kids can do with the blindfold. So talk to you about your experience with these kids, because I was surprised when you said you actually knew Seth when I, after I had done some videos with him.
Look, Grant, if it's weird and wonderful, I've usually got a book on it or I've gone into it. So, because that's me. I've come across this through a number of sources, you know. One of the interesting one that I discovered is many other cultures or have looked at these children and explored their potential. 20, 30 years ago, Paul Dong wrote about China's super psychics, how they could move, the children could move things with their mind, etc. That was in the 1980s or whatever they were talking about this. So India, they have already worked with children that can do this. Russia is way ahead where they can do a lot of this, where a child can read a book by holding it under their arm and you just have to ask what page and they'll read it to you from their memory of downloading it from under their arm. I mean, this is incredible stuff. And then I got to know about the training for the children, and actually right here in Agnes, we had Karen come over from Canada, who is part of the ICU, and Nicola Farmer, who's a really good mate of mine. So, because she's as weird and wonderful as I am, and my grandchildren had a go at this. And of course, Leonie, I've known for a long time. So that was the first time Seth was actually exposed to this, and he just ran with it. I've got another video that you probably haven't seen of a young lady that did the course as well. And she was then reading, she was seeing around, literally able to see 360 degrees. Over a few hours, over a weekend, that they were doing this. It was, I went and met Karen, and I also met the children and what have you, so I could see how it was all working. I mean, for me, this is what we are headed for. This is our potential. This is what it showed me, that even in a few hours, these kids could do this. The only reason we can't do it as adults is because we've got the programming to transcend first and get to realize we can do it. So I've known Leonie, gosh, a lot of years now, and what's brilliant is she's gone ahead with that and offered support to others and is teaching other children here. But the fact is that it is something that is, I know that Nicola Farmer is teaching it in Europe, and teaching it in some schools as well. So this is starting to unfold. To me, I have always been aware from my research that the potential was there. It was like remote viewing, wasn't it? You know, scientific remote viewing, where, you know, I read the book, Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain in the 1970s, that was. That gives my age away, doesn't it? but they were doing all of this stuff, you know, it behind the Iron Curtain, you know, in Russia. They're doing it in these other countries. It's just that, the, you know, we're so arrogant in our Western society, it's taken us a bit longer to get there. But I think more and more now, this is going to be coming out, because we're getting, you know, these new upgrades of human that are showing amazing potential. When you've got a 9-year-old explaining to her mom that one of the star languages she speaks heals water, and the mother noticed the difference in the water afterwards. We've got Masaru Emoto, who was showing that prayer, intent, you know, positive music change the frequency of the molecule of water. And what are we? 70 to 80% water. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to work out that this is a reality, that it's not airy fairy. There is science there. And it's about us now understanding that we've got to, you know, be open enough to accept that we are exploring a level of consciousness, which is really what we're talking about.
You mentioned the star languages. Can you go a little bit into that? And when did you first come across this light language thing? Because I, you know, I've been in a long time, just like you have. And I remember when I first saw that, a woman doing a, just, you may know Mark Olson, she was doing a message for him. And I went, what is that? And I mean, I was like, I've been in this a long time. And it suddenly, it's like, I never heard that. And suddenly it was like, everybody was doing this light language. And I'm going like, it's almost like a development. So when did you first hear about light language? And can you talk about what do you think this is and why it's here?
The light language is, for me, being a fascinating one. And I came across it very early on, simply because I'm a therapist first before I'm a researcher. And what I was noticing was some of those that were doing the artwork, like Tracy Taylor's artwork, Tracy was also coming out with the languages. And so I was being exposed to some of the younger adults that were saying, I'm coming out with these languages, or I'm experiencing these languages. So I needed to, I was fascinated by the fact that some were very similar, some were very different. And I wanted to understand why or what was going on with them. And many of them said, it feels normal to me. It feels like I know that language. But what I did find was with some of them, some could be translated, but some couldn't. And I wanted to know what that meant. And it seems to be that some of the languages come from other places in the cosmos. So depending on where that soul has originated or one of their origins, they're bringing that frequency through. And what, I mean, I've got a beautiful video of Rochelle D'Ila actually doing healing with the languages, saying it touches the soul origin as it heals. So some of them are healing frequencies. Some of them are activating frequencies. And when you get, I put some script in my book, Awakening, and a mother contacted me and said, my seven-year-old daughter was watching, you know, looking at me, looking at this, in your book, and said, I can read that. And the mother said, you can read it? And she said, oh, yes. And she proceeded to read it. And told her what it was. I spoke to this seven-year-old on Skype, and I said, your mom says you can read this script in my book in Awakening. Oh, yes, she said. And I said, can you read it to me? Oh, yes. She said, do you want it in the language or do you want it in English? And I said, can you do both? Oh, yes. So right in front of me, instantaneously, she speaks in the language, she translates it into English, and I then said to her, do you know the source of that language? Yes, she said, that's the grace.
Wow.
So I'm blown away by this. She's seven. And I saw her about a month later with another group, and I had a whole file of these different scripts and different writing coming from experiences. And I said, can you read any of these? And she was with her mum and a few others. Yes, she said, but not all of them. Some of them I can't read. And she picked one out and she started to read almost diagonally. She read it in the language, she translated it. And then she told me, I said, what's the source? She said, that's the greys and the mantis. So you've got a seven-year-old that can actually translate those scripts, that has and knows the language of them. This, you know, it blows your mind to think that these children have this awareness. So what I've come to understand, and I've gone into this quite a deal, some of the languages can be translated, but some of them are compressed files of data that I believe are put there for a future time when we can understand them. It's almost like some of the script, as one lady told me, it's like one script alone can fill a room full of encyclopedias. It's a compressed file, multidimensional compressed file of data. So I want to know, okay, because I'm always going one step ahead saying, you know, okay, so what does this mean? And I thought, maybe, just maybe, they're, you know, because we can't translate them right now, so they're for future use. So what is going to happen to the future human for them to be able to understand that? And as we only have 5% of our DNA apparently activated, what's going on with the, you know, the other dormant DNA? Maybe when that's activated, we can then access that. In other words, the software for the new computer, human. I've no idea if I'm right, but I'm always trying to work out where is this taking us, you know? And I know it's just a hypothesis, but if you look at the children and how activated they are, they're already tuning into the multidimensional universe. It's just older models that need to be activated so that we can access similar data. That's how I see it, because we've all got the potential, because we've got the potential in our DNA. So when you ask about that, when people say to me, what's the evidence that this is real? You know, where's the piece of the craft? You know, where are these beings? I'm saying this, you don't start manifesting star languages and light language and script and artwork and this downloading music and scientific information and what have you, unless it's real, because, you know, fantasy, you don't do that. You don't manifest all this after a fantasy. But if it's real and you change, and that's the other thing you know about, Grant, what we change after the experience, they lose interest in materialistic values. They start to live more holistic lifestyles. They access what they feel is their mission or purpose. They want to help all humanity. They change in their philosophy completely. This only happens after a major awareness or shift in consciousness that's related to their encounters. That is your evidence. It's right in front of you. It's in the person themselves.
Are you optimistic for the future of the world? Because you'll see people on the screen, you know, showing the screen on board the ship with the devastation and stuff like that. And you're seeing the other side. Are you optimistic about the fact that these children will shift the world around in time?
I am. I think why they've been shown those disaster scenarios is to take note. You've got to do something. You can't sit around, you know, in your comfortable little home and think it's all going to get sorted. So I think they're warning signs. When I spoke to a 10-year-old last year, he was someone, again, reasonably local. He said that he was visited by light beings. He came from a planet of light where you manifest instantly. He explained, here it takes longer to manifest because it's a denser reality. And I asked him about what was happening in terms of his understanding of the planet. And he said, Mary, this is the reset, but he meant it in a positive way. He wasn't saying it was a negative thing. It's like, this is the wake-up call for humanity. A 12-year-old with ADHD was saying that this planet had been in this place at least three times before it reached this level. He said, and they didn't make it. He said, but I believe this time there's a 95% chance to 100% chance we will make it. So he was feeling really positive about that. And on the whole, all I'm getting from most people is this is the time now for us as a species. We are getting ready to literally wake up to who and what we are and our potential. And often we need to be at that point, that crossroads, that dark place before we can go forward. And I always remember Command Sergeant Robert Dean, who was, you know, this beautiful soul who I met a number of times. And I remember him explaining in his last few years, he admitted he'd been on the craft many times. He'd never said that earlier on in his talks, but he finally admitted he'd been on the craft. And he explained everything to do with the DNA. And we had at least 12 different inserts of DNA from various intelligences. And he said, although we're going to go through a difficult time, he said, I was shown the future of humanity. And he said, it is I think he said there's something like magnificent. In other words, that's going to be the future of humanity. And he was someone that I absolutely trusted in terms of his data and his information. So we're getting some really hopeful and positive messages. And, you know, the one thing that I'm finding, Grant, at the moment is many of those that have come to this planet with their mandate, with their mission, are finding it really hard right now because of their sensitivity to deal with what we're dealing with. And it's almost like I'm reminding them of why they've come, and to say, you haven't come for a waste of time. You wouldn't have bothered to incarnate unless you knew in the end we would get there. And it's about reminding ourselves of the fact that, you know, all of us have come with that mandate to change it. And we wouldn't, you know, I certainly wouldn't have agreed to come to this planet if I didn't think I was going to at least do something to make a difference down here. So I think, you know, that's what we need to remind ourselves, that we have amazing abilities and they're just starting to be activated now.
Yeah, I always try to remind people when they complain about the situation, I always say, you know, if it's a reincarnation world, you and I chose to come at this time, this place, in the middle of this mess, and perhaps we came for a reason. Maybe we came to change things, and you see it from a different perspective. Going to the whole thing about your role here, I remember you telling a story. Maybe you can tell again this synchronistic story about how you got into your first regression case, how you got dragged in with the Bud Hopkins book. Is that an accurate story of how you... Because that's the kind of stuff I thought was very weird. You had that one, and you had the other synchronistic story that happens with Ray Hernandez when you start the Free Foundation. That bizarre thing where you sort of look at things and you go like, oh, this is all connected. It's all meant to be as you see it unfold.
Oh, look, I have come to understand that we're more than our physical body. And there's a part of us that is very much orchestrating the journey along with other family, you know, a soul family, if you like, because I've worked as a clinical hypnotherapist working with past lives. And then you start to see the connection to past lives. Those that have had past lives where they've been visited by ETs, by the way, in other past lives as well. But the thing that got me into this was a progression from opening up myself to the multidimensional and also doing a lot of work with past lives as well. But I hadn't come across anything to do with extraterrestrials, interdimensionals in that sense until literally a couple of weeks before a gentleman came to see me. I picked up two books. One of them was Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens, which was Dr. John Mack, professor of psychiatry at Harvard University. I thought, oh, this looks interesting. So I picked that one up. And then I saw Communion on the same day in this bookshop. What's that? You know, Whitley Strieber, Communion. So of course, you know, anything like that, if it's weird, I'm reading it, you know? And so I read these books. Literally in less than a fortnight, a gentleman comes through my door and he says, Mary, I've heard you're open-minded. With this, there's no support groups. For this, they just think you're a loony. And he said he had woken up with marks on his body, shaved areas, but it wasn't just him. It was his partner and the children. And he said, the relatives won't come to the house because they think it's demons. They're, you know, terrified. And I remember looking at this and thinking, right, so here we go. This must be quite rare. 2 weeks later, there's another lady walks through the door with having experiences and it just unfolded. But the interesting thing was I was doing advanced counseling at the Wesley Institute. And I decided to take Ellis Taylor's story to this conventional advanced counseling course. And I thought, well, they'll either say he's crazy or they won't, you know, whatever, but I'm going to take it in because I want help. I want to know if I'm doing the right thing. And I was waiting to hear them say, oh, you know, he's lost the plot, he's fantasizing, all this kind of stuff. Every single one of them started to share their what we would call supernatural stories or their weird stories of being haunted or whatever. It was like I'd open the door to everyone saying, I had this experience. I had this experience. And I remember thinking, well, why isn't this part of the course? you know, you're all having these experiences, but it's not in, you know, the psychology books, you know. And that was when I decided to do my, you know, to create something that was professional and credible, so people had somewhere to come, because I realized, literally, as I started the support group with a social worker who was having experiences, 12 people turned up on our very first support group, just exploded, and 3,500 people later. So I am absolutely certain this is orchestrated. And when I came across poor old Ray's email that was 6 months down the track and felt terrible, thinking, where, how did I miss this, you know? And got in touch with him and said, I'm so sorry. I had, you know, I've missed this. And he said, look, it's fine. There's been lots of other stuff happening. He says, but I need to talk to somebody who understands the physics of this. And I said, well, I've got a good friend, Dr. Rudy Shield, who I'd met a few years earlier at a special group meeting in the US, where we got to be, you know, really good friends. And I said, look, I can connect you with Dr. Rudy Shield. Send me your bio, your story, and I'll send it to him. Literally, Rudy got in touch with him with less than 12 hours, and then recommended connecting with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, etc. And of course, he was getting the download, you've got to do something about this. You've got to start creating something credible and all the rest of it. So he said, what do you think, Mary? And I said, well, Dr. Edgar Mitchell said, yes, I think you should be doing it. Rudy said, yes, I think you should be doing it. I said, and so the bit that Ray may have told you or not was, he said, what are we going to call it, Mary? And he was coming out with all these long, you know, lovely names and all the rest of it. And I'm saying, give me about an hour. I said, give me about an hour. And I said to the team, so what's it going to be then? What's it supposed to be? What do we have that has the right frequency and la, 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 la. Within half an hour, it was free. You know, the whole thing was, you know, the foundation for research into extraterrestrial encounters was free in every sense of the word, about bringing this freely to humanity and all the because I go into frequencies and I look at all of that. So I thank my team, because a CERN came from my team. Whenever I, you know, I just say, well, what is it, you see? And the team says, yeah, and that's, oh, that works, right, okay. It always works. So, you know, I'm very grateful to the team who orchestrate everything to make sure I don't miss the bus in terms of what I'm supposed to do.
Wow. One of the stories, I don't know if you know, like my synchronicity in that regard was, I was doing the presidents, and I had the experience with Colin Andrews talking about consciousness and crop circles, where I suddenly got this download experience. That happened a week before Ray's dog was healed. And then Ray, I started the consciousness thing. Then Ray had this encounter where he interacted where the craft showed up over the house where he's asking for it. And he said, you can contact me. So he looks up consciousness and UFOs, and my name comes up. So he talks to me, and I said, well, I'm coming to Florida and I'm giving a lecture on consciousness. Bring your wife and we'll talk. And so he comes, and he shares his first time he's ever been to a conference. And 2 days later, he's in the Miami on the freeway. And that's when he has the experience where he gets taken up in the thing. And I go, like, there's no way you can make this stuff up. And it was just so synchronistic, where you see it all fitting together. And so I think you see, like I sometimes explain to people, and you can probably see the same thing, is like, it's almost like a team that we're all together before we come in and say, okay, you do this, I'll do this. And we're coming in at this particular time to achieve something that we have agreed to this. Whereas people see the world as sort of a random thing, and we're just, you know, you got a better deal than I got and all this kind of stuff. Is that the way you see it?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was doing the reincarnation thing, where taking people back to their origins, and it'd be other planets sometimes. But what was also fascinating with the past life stuff was people having experiences with these beings in other lifetimes on this planet. And I always remember a particular one where a young lady wanted a past life regression, and she went back to medieval times in this regression. And I said, as the wise woman, who taught you the right medicines and to actually do this, you know, being the wise woman and healer. And she said, well, I learnt it in the woods. And I said, so who was in the woods that taught you? She says, they were little grey beings with big black eyes. Wow. And I thought, okay, got it. Okay.
Wow. Wow. Fascinating. Now, I want to ask you a couple last questions. Like, I want to get you, because we're supposed to talk about Contact in the Desert. So what are you doing now? Like, what are you going to be talking about at the Contact in the Desert? And what's your material that you're working on now? Where do you see yourself going in terms of your research?
Two good questions. The one, what I've done for Contact in the Desert is to actually share a story of an ex-military man who had an interaction with the ball of light and his experience of it, how he then had the downloads directly afterwards from that experience and is continuing with this intelligence that was this ball of light. And I mean, it's lovely because you hear him telling it how it was for him and some other rather interesting video of the orbs and what have you. So I'm showing that contact isn't just with different forms that you see, that often it is through this orb phenomena that are actually intelligences. And I'm, you know, I go into that. And also the hybrids, the different levels of hybrids that are coming in and their understanding of their hybrid nature and also their children on board craft. So that's taking that side of things. The next one is all about the phenomena that joins the act, which I call the activation, which is everything to do with the scripts, the artwork, the little 11-year-old that downloaded music, one of them called decoding DNA, for example. It's an activation type presentation because everything is about the scripts, the artwork and how that all works. So it is something that's going to shift people that are open to that shift. I've also done one for the first time on this one is hypnosis. And I'm focusing on two stories. One of them is a gentleman that gets drawn outside where he's always seeing craft and had this strange illness as a child, which he wanted to understand. They're both actually from New Zealand, but live in Australia. And the second one is a gentleman that was on a naval ship seeing a craft, and that brought him back dreams of when he was a child in his little town in New Zealand, where the huge, huge mother craft went over, and he said he'd completely forgotten about it until after he'd seen the sighting on board the craft, the naval ship, and explaining how then he was shown all this stuff on board craft. So it's showing how hypnosis can really answer many, many questions and open people up to more understanding. So I want to demystify hypnosis. In regards to my latest research, again, still very much interested in what the children are saying and the time traveling side of this now, and some of the hybrids are talking about coming from future times. One young lady recently told me she remembers being on another timeline in a very advanced civilization, and now being brought to this human timeline where she's really struggling because she's very limited here and they're all a bit dumb, you know, she's sort of struggling with the limits of humanity and whatever. So we're talking about timelines, we're talking about future beings. And as this 9-year-old said, they are us from the future. So we're getting all into the matrix. And so I'm just going, you know, more and more down this rabbit hole. I've got no idea where the end is, but we just keep going because it's interesting and I'm curious and nosy and I want to know a bit of this before I'm no longer here, so I should continue no matter how crazy people think I am.
I think you're on the same path as me, as I'm just getting very curious at the whole thing, and I find, and you probably agree, that the more you look at it, the more complex it gets. It doesn't get any simpler. You just get more amazed at how complex the universe is and how many levels there are and stuff like that, that we are just our arrogance that we sort of figure we got all figured out. And the way I had the one download where they basically said to me, you're playing with a lot of wrong blocks. Like, you replace the flat earth block and the sun goes around the earth block and the solid block and stuff, but you still got all the wrong blocks. In fact, they told me at one point, they said, not only have you got it wrong, it's exactly the opposite of what you think it is. And this kind, and I think you're finding the same thing, is the more you look at it, and I keep saying to people, I used to say it was 1,000 times more complex. Now I'm saying, no, I think it's even more complex than that. That when you interact with these people and hear the message, I think that's why I'm so happy that you're in this field, is that we have a situation where people just want the entertainment, they want disclosure, technology, and stuff like that. When in fact there's much more valuable stuff in terms of the message, and you and I are both on that track, which is not really recognized, which will eventually get recognized. But they are here for a reason, and so I'm so honored to talk to you and to see that you're on this same field fighting. And it's maybe 500 years from now, it'll be like we were, you know, sort of at the time of Christ, living at the time of Christ or whatever, that we sort of figured it out or whatever. But it is very entertaining, and I agree with you that it's just you can't put it down if you wanted to. We used to have a joke, and I remember back in the old days, people would say, "Oh, the guy quit. He's quit. He's had it. He's never coming back." And I go, "No, they all come back. Don't worry, he's coming back." And people will leave for maybe a year or two, but they always come back because it is. I can't think of anything more entertaining that you could possibly do in terms of keeping yourself alive and the mystery and the excitement and stuff of figuring this out. So I really appreciate the work you're doing, and hopefully we can interact down at a conference or something once all this other stuff clears up. And and your work. Talk about your books. You've got a couple of books and you've got a DVD. Can you talk about some of the stuff that you have out there?
Yes, my book Awakening is really for anyone who thinks they might be having experiences and want to actually start making sense of it, because I wrote it to help people who didn't have resources. So every question that came up, I thought, well, that's going in the book. And, you know, really and truly, that it was what you'll find interesting is every chapter that I did, it might be on, I don't know, the hypnosis, or it might be the fear, or it might be how do I know it's real. I would get phone calls, or I'd get emails that on that particular area of what I was writing about. So they made sure I got the right information.
Yeah.
And that was what really was awakening. But the second one is about not just the children and their stories about being multidimensional and their experiences with the beings and their understanding. It's also about the teenagers that are, you know, that have got their mission and how they understand themselves. Including then, I've looked at the DNA. I've tried to keep it really balanced. I've got one that is about to do with the God. I call it the God chapter. It's about the two ministers of religion that have admitted they've had experiences and how that's challenged their understanding and their dogma and what have you, which is really powerful. And also I've got a medical doctor in there as well. And also someone who is out of body more than they're embodied. So I'm deliberately stretching the paradigm, because I've edited nothing out of it. No matter how it challenges, I think I say to people, if it challenges you, stop running away from it. Start looking at why it challenges you, because you might just learn something.
Yeah. Yeah. And the stuff that was challenging 10 years ago now is common. Like I remember with the light language, I used to think, come on, this is just weird. And now it's like, oh yeah, that's not weird. Now it's almost like they're turning the pages of a book, and they put something else in a little bit weirder. And so where can people get a hold of you if they want to have stories or whatever, or have the children, have children that are engaging?
My website's acern.com.au or maryrodwell.com.au, Facebook. Just Google me and they'll give you different ways of accessing me. I'm not hard to find.
Beautiful. Okay, thanks a lot for your insight and your taking time with me. And Contact in the Desert is June the 25th to the 28th. I'll be speaking there, and I'm doing portals. So I'm doing sort of the same sort of thing as you, as I'm getting into the really weird aspect to say, you think you understand what's going on, take a look at this stuff. So hopefully people will tune into you there and share some stories. And let's talk again when I have a little bit better internet connection. I'm having trouble with my internet connection. So thank you very much, Mary. And let's talk again soon.
Absolute pleasure, Grant. And it's so lovely to talk with someone who gets it in the same way I do. So we're both as weird as one another.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.